to the college, and they don't know a lot about municipal politics, and everybody sort of rolls their eyes when you mention it. But as we've gone through this process, it's been very exciting, and they've really bought in, and they're doing a great job.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully we'll figure out a way to engage the youth in this part of the riding as well as we move towards the voting day. Now, again, it's not one day, though. It's like a week.
And it's there's going to be no polls. We're doing this all through the miracle of modern technology, mm-hmm. through by phone, online. I understand the pins have been sent out.
Yep.
And we should be all looking for those in our mail. If we don't get them by, what is it, October 15th? We got to let people know.
Yeah, midweek next week. If you don't get them by Wednesday of next week, you got to let your town clerks know and get a hold of them. And get a hold of them fast. And if you're voting in Alden McAlderman or in some of the other areas where it's a mail-in ballot, you should have already well have received the information you need to participate there. So if you haven't got that information in the mail, you want to definitely follow up with your town officials to make sure you get that, because I believe that's the case in at least one part of this riding.
Absolutely. Are you getting nostalgic for the old polls and the ballots and the paper?
I'm not. I'm not getting nostalgic at all. But one point that was raised by Pat McCourt last week was the idea of campaigning, because, you know, at the federal and provincial levels, you can't campaign on Election Day.
Mm-hmm.
But the municipal level, apparently you can. And with elections going basically for 7 days, from the 20th to the 27th, you still have the ability to knock on doors.
Well, and I'm sure that makes for some interesting encounters between the candidates and residents. I mean, it's great if you've made up your mind, but it's a real opportunity. As I've said many times when you and I have talked, municipal politics is all about what goes on at the doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure there's going to be a flurry of activity in these final days as we draw closer to Election Day to get out there and get people motivated.
Well, today, as I said, we're going to talk about the deputy mayoral candidates in Coburg primarily. We'll move on to the other candidates as well if we still have time. So, you went online. Thanks for doing some research here, Rob. John Henderson has a page, which is JH with a check mark there. Change the change we need, apparently. He says he's a candidate for town council because he cares deeply about Coburg and its future. Coburg has been their family home for the past 25 years. He's been a committee member on Coburg's Waterfront Development Master Plan, Parks and Rec, Ontario Municipal Recreation Association Award, chair of Coburg's Waterfront Festival in the town of Coburg, member and chair of the Police Services Board, participant in the Tannery Community Improvement Plan, and the vice chair of the Parking Committee. So that's John Henderson. That's his history. Paul Pagnuolo, he's sort of a new entity here. He's published a comprehensive analysis and critique of details of the budget, which you can get at his online site. He's an avid proponent of direct democracy. Pagnuolo says, "I will ensure that residents have an ongoing process and opportunity, including the selective use of referendums, to have their say on major issues like the proposed marina expansion and $10 million bridges." Being elected to council, Pagnuolo said, does not mean that voters are writing a blank check for seven people to make decisions in isolation based solely on their views of the future. So that's just a little bit about what Paul Pagnuolo had to say. And Donna Todd says she's running for deputy mayor. She says she's a retired Province of Ontario employee, currently councillor of the town of Coburg, and also a certified yoga instructor. She's running in this election, and she believes that the opportunity exists to find unique solutions in Coburg for the problems that currently plague many small urban municipalities, namely the loss of manufacturing and vacancy rates in our downtown cores. We mentioned that with Belleville as well. Those solutions will be found through public discourse, seeking advice from local experts, utilizing town staff, and focused debate. The town also needs to address the coordinator system for the roles of councillors. By its nature, it isolates councillors and diminishes their role. This system leads to the hoarding of information and the inability to see the big picture. And I would have to agree with her on that point as well. And I think John Henderson, although he doesn't say it in his piece online, he did talk about it during the debates. All candidates, actually, in the deputy mayoral debate said that the coordinator system, quite frankly, has to go.
I'm not clear why, though. Explain this to me, Dave, because I'm somebody who's not so opposed to it. So what is the problem? I think information is there. Civil servants are there. You ask. To me, it comes back to what kind of a relationship do you have with town staff?
Well, it's also what kind of relationship do you have with the other town councillors, too, right?
Absolutely.
Because, you know, if you are the Parks and Rec councillor and you are interloping, if you will, on another aspect, if you want to look at finance, for instance, well, you know, that's not part of your portfolio, right? And so you know, may not have direct access to the information you need. I'm going to equate it very much to like what's happening at the federal government level with regards to national security. The government of the day is keeping all their information in one in one sealed envelope. The opposition either has to apply through access of information to get the information or embarrass the government into giving them the information. And that is what the coordinator system is doing as well here in our little municipal government.
Well, I'm going to disagree. I'm going to say that this is about politics and that people hoarding information is a completely different issue than accessibility. If politicians trust each other and they have good relationships with each other, then information should flow freely. The same with staff. So when you say to me that you can't get information, then I'm wanting to say, have a look in the mirror and what is going on with you in your relationship with your colleagues and with staff. And it's not just simply, well, it's an old boys club or the coordinator system doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, they've had 4 years to learn how to work together. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they can't, and now it's going to be blamed on the system, I'm sorry, it just doesn't cut it. You guys need to be able to work together, and if you haven't shown us that you can do that, then why do you want this job? Because you know what? When you're deputy mayor, that's a big part of what you do.
Well, we started the show off with money changes everything because we know that the deputy mayor is responsible for the budget and responsible for the way the money is spent in town, or at least how it's being directed. Part of the problem, I think, with a lot of people, and again, we're going to go back to the coordinator thing, is that if you're not willing to work together, which, I mean, even the previous government was a situation where you had a 4-3 split. It wasn't always the same 4-3, but a 4-3 split. And you and I talked about this the last time you were on, how I said, well, there needs to be more communication so that you can get people on board. And I think you came away thinking that, you know, I just want everyone to get along and vote together. That's what I really wanted to say was that, you know, and I'm going to talk about Jack Layton again, because that was one of the great things about Jack Layton. You know, even if you didn't like him, and a lot of councillors in Toronto, let's face it, didn't like Jack Layton, but they were willing to work with him because here's a guy who could come up with solutions to problems. And, you know, I like to say a problem is only a problem until you have a solution. And then all you have to do is implement it. So really, there are no problems. There are just solutions waiting to be implemented. And unless you're willing to work with the other players on the field, it's not going to happen. You're going to see 4-3 splits. You're going to see frustration through the coordinator process. And maybe Donna Todd had a problem with getting information. I know Miriam Mouton's had the problem in the past with getting information. I know some of the other councillors in the past have had problems with getting information. So it's about sharing the information. Now, John Henderson said, rather than having a coordinator system, perhaps we should have a committee system whereby we could have a finance committee, we could have a recs and tourism committee, we could have a committee for development, and that way each of the councillors could choose to sit on those committees, and it would be those committees that would be making the determination to staff. It seems to be a little more communicative, a little more open in terms of a process. And that way there's not so much of this silo perspective, if you will. And maybe, again, it may just be politics, Rob.
That would be my call. I think, though, it's interesting because we were talking about, this position being the one where finance is going to be so critical. And I know that Mr. Pagliaro, this is his – the main thrust of his campaign is to say that he's got the business experience and that he's got the background and that he's a fiscal conservative. But, you know, the thing is that we're talking about local government, which is a big difference between that and government. And while, you know, we like to play with words sometimes, you know, the corporation of the town of Cobourg. Yeah, really.
Sorry. I thought we were going to do that together.
I'm sorry.
That was the theme, by the way. If you hear the word corporation, that's the response you're going to get. Because, yeah, it is the corporation of the town of Cobourg. And all three candidates talked about that in the debate on TV Kojiko. But the reality is, it is a corporation, yes, but it's a corporation that has to act in the best interest of its shareholders, and the shareholders in this case are voters and taxpayers, unlike shareholders who are just going, oh, well, it dropped 5 cents, I'm going to sell it next week. You can't do that with a corporation like a town.
And we also have to provide services, which in some cases are things that are not necessarily going to give you return on investment or necessarily are going to be the most effective or efficient ways of doing things. You know, privatization, cutting back, doesn't always solve the problems. And we're seeing now that, you know, all these cutbacks around us, and all of a sudden the services start to fall away.
Absolutely.
And so what is a responsible way to spend money? So who's answering those questions, really? And I think when you looked at the platforms, you know, who's really getting to it? I mean, you've been watching the debates, I understand, on Kojiko. What did you hear when you watched the debates that particularly impressed you about their fiscal plans?
Well, of these three, to be frank with you, nothing. I'm going to put it to you as plainly as I can. After watching the debate, I came away thinking, okay, well, we have three candidates, and they're all very similar in their perspective. They all talked about the same thing, you know, accountability and transparency, you know, the wetlands, downtown vitalization, and all of that, you know, all the buzzwords of this particular campaign. But it doesn't appear to me, at least as a viewer, that there was actually a comprehensive plan in place. I mean, we have one candidate who wants to reduce property taxes, and they all said the same thing about finding efficiencies, and we definitely need to find efficiencies within the municipality.
But what does that mean?
Well,
what does that mean? I mean, that's a great it's a great slogan. You know, Rob Ford plays with it. I understand John Floyd over in Port Hope's been playing with this idea of being on a gravy train, mm-hmm. got to get off. But what are you going to cut, and who is that going to affect? And what do they have to say?
Well,
about
you know
that?
What? And none of the three candidates said that they were looking to cut anybody or cutting staff or reducing staff. What they are doing, and it's the same thing as was talked about on the Port Hope mayoral debate in terms of finding efficiencies. How do you find efficiencies? Well, you use your staff to the best advantage that you have. You have skilled staff that can create reports, that can present reports, that can provide you the information you need in order to move forward and make wise spending decisions. The idea that we spend a lot of money on consultants, for instance, that's something that none of these candidates really touched on, was the idea that we spend a lot of money on consultants. And then we get these reports, and the only person who talked about that was Paul Fagnuolo, who says we get these reports and then they just sit on the shelf and nobody reads them. And so nothing gets implemented. So we've just had we've had staff look into a problem, we've had staff come up with a report, we've had a consultant's report completed, and then it just sits on the shelf. How is that finding efficiencies? That's just wasting more money. So one of the things that they talked about was the fact that we need to use staff to the best of their own skills and utilize their skill levels to try and find ways of, you know, bringing more business here or saving money primarily.
But I think that's just some rhetorical flourishes that really don't bear out in real life. I mean, go down to town hall and ask the staff. I mean, let's find out how many hours they're spending. I mean, the reason that they bring in consultants is because the staff is too busy. And you know, give me some hard numbers. I've never seen hard numbers that these guys are sitting around and got spare time. So, you know, it. I think sometimes there's an urban mythology that gets generated around some of this stuff. And I think we need to slow down and talk about it in realistic terms. Because if there was efficiencies to be found, don't you think Stan Frost would have found it already? Don't you think the previous councils would have seen all these? Like, are people that ignorant that it hasn't happened? Maybe some people would say yes. But I'm going to say I don't think it's quite there. But I will say that the idea that some of these reports sit on shelves and are not being implemented, that's a good point. And I think that we often see too many of these recommendations sort of float out there, mm-hmm. and then there is no follow-up. But I see that as a political problem, not as a bureaucratic one.
Well, exactly. And that's why you can't lay the blame at the feet of staff, because, frankly, it's not their job.
That's right.
Right. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more Consider This here on your Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. Stick around.
Welcome to the Royal Canadian Legion Branch, 133 Coburg. Are you renewing your membership or becoming a member?
Becoming a member, and I've got my grandpa's combat boots, his service records, his medals, his ID, and him.
Hello.
Well, you don't need these. The Legion's for everybody, not just veterans.
So, I didn't need to bring all this stuff?
No.
Okay, guys, don't bring the tank in.
The Royal Canadian Legion is at 136 Orr Street in Coburg. To become a member, call Don at 905-372-2231 today.
Sometimes we find it hard to ask for help, but at certain times of our lives, it's the responsible thing to do. Jim McGrath is your local source for legal advice. Estate planning, home purchasing, or legal concerns about your business, Jim McGrath provides a hands-on approach that best represents your needs. Jim has been practicing law for 30 years, and he fully understands the law, so you don't have to. Call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999, because you owe it to yourself and your loved ones to have a responsible professional looking after your legal needs.
A question for Crystal Smith, chiropodist and co-owner of We Fix You Physiotherapy and Foot Health Centers.
My heel hurts when I get up in the morning. It feels really sharp, so bad that I can't put any weight on it. What could be causing this pain?
If you feel a sharp, hot, or bruised sensation on the bottom of your heel, or you feel a tearing in your arch, you may have a common problem called plantar fasciitis, which is inflammation of the tight tissue that forms the arch of your foot. If not treated properly, your pain can worsen to the point that it interferes with your ability to work, enjoy physical activity, or do any of the things you love. It is important to see a foot health expert, a chiropodist. At We Fix You, we will perform a thorough evaluation of your feet, the way you walk, and even assess your current shoes. You will learn the cause of your pain and how your heel pain can be eliminated quickly and safely without surgery or medication. The sooner you start treatment, the sooner your feet will stop hurting.
If you have heel pain, contact We Fix You in Cobourg or Port Hope.
Hometown Bingo is your community connection for fun and excitement 7 days a week. This month at Hometown Bingo,
pick your prize bingo, draw a lucky ball, and receive 2x, 3x, or 4x the regular amount of the game you have just won. On a $100 game, you might win $400. This is for all regular games and the jackpot.
Hometown Bingo in Colbert, 884 Division Street, just south of Elgin on the east side. And check out their website, hometownbingo.ca.
The three most visited sites on the web are Google, Facebook, and YouTube. For a business to thrive in such times, they have to make use of as many of these channels as possible. Is your business marketing through these platforms? Matthews Media is now offering a selection of social media marketing packages available for any size of business. We set up, customize, and push your content across all relevant online profiles, driving prospective clients toward your business. To find out more about online and social media marketing, visit our website at matthewsmedia.ca or call 905-375-9520.
And welcome back to The Drive Time. We do have a caller online, and it is Teresa Rickerby, who is running for town council. Teresa, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, Dave. Thanks.
Glad to have you call in. Now, you're calling in regarding something
Well, I'm
Rob
calling
said.
In because, yeah, well, no, I'm listening to the show, and it's very interesting. I just wanted to touch base on something that Rob had said about improving efficiencies and about the need for consultants, which is something I'm hearing at the door. It's one of the main concerns. With the public is why are we spending so much money on consultants? And I just wanted to touch base with Rob because this past few years I've had the opportunity to work closely with Stan Frost, the deputy mayor. He was our council rep on the DBIA board. Mm-hmm. And Stan was quite public, actually, about his opposition to the study that was done for parking, for instance, as well as the $50,000 we spent on an operational review. So he did see those as inefficiencies. And he did voice that. So I just wanted to say that because we've done so many parking studies for our downtown, and the downtown hasn't changed. And we didn't really need another parking study to tell us what we already knew, but it was another $30,000 we spent. So anyway, I don't think it was necessary. And I do think that we need to utilize our town staff, their skills better. I think that sometimes there has to be a decision made at that level, like either at council or at a staff level, that, and it might not be popular with the public, but sometimes that needs to be made and we don't need to outsource that decision.
Well, that's very interesting because I guess what I was responding to, and I'm not arguing. I hear what you're saying absolutely, and it's a great example. I guess what I'm arguing is that oftentimes people make it sound as if town staff is doing nothing, or that they're sitting around drinking coffee all day, and I think that that's a misperception. When I meant urban myth, that's the kind of thing that I oppose. Certainly there are opportunities maybe not to do so many studies, and who can argue with that? But I think to say that, you know, staff somehow is sitting around and has time to do this study or do that study, or we can internalize everything, I think that puts a little bit much in front of those people. But I mean, yeah. You know, I think what you're talking about is what both Dave and I agree with, and that is that if you give political direction to staff, their job is to do that. So if there's ways that you can give them clearer direction and clearer mandates, obviously it's their job to come through and deliver. And that's very, very reasonable. But your point's well taken. I was a little bit too obtuse in what I was saying. But thanks for pointing it out.
Yeah, no problem. And I understand what you're saying. And I think it is important for people to realize that the town staff, you know, for the most part, I think they do work very diligently and they work hard and they do have a lot on their plate. But I think there are also, in terms of improving efficiencies, like we're talking about, like the vagueness of the term is really, I think about there is a need to open up communication between departments, sharing of information, pooling of resources. I mean, just in the work that I do with the town on I've seen that, where there could definitely be an improvement in sharing of resources, even between the DBIA and the town during event planning and those kinds of things, marketing. There's a lot of room to save money. So I don't think we should be slashing taxes. And you're right, slashing taxes means cutting services. But I don't think we need to be spending more. I think we, with what we are currently spending, we could be getting a lot more for our money.
And I think that's something that's very different than the when the term efficiencies are used. And again, it's you know, language and how it's used in rhetoric. But, you know, when we talk about efficiencies, and oftentimes that's just a buzzword for cutting. So I think it's important, and I'm glad you've delineated this as being, you know, something very, very different. So that's good.
Yeah. Well, that's good, because I have been using the word efficiencies, and I don't mean it in the way that I don't mean cutting. So, and maybe I need to be more clear about that when I'm talking to people too, but what exactly I mean when I say improving efficiencies, because really that's what I mean, is in communication resources, you know, even working within with the town departments and the county and, you know.
Well, there's a lot of crossover in terms of expenditure, too. I mean, the county's spending money that the town's spending and that Port Hope is spending. All three levels are spending the same money to do the same thing. That's not efficient. I mean, those are some of the kinds of efficiencies that I think you're talking about. And Julie Mavis is talking about it. Bob Sanderson is saying the same thing over in Port Hope as well. I mean, they're saying what you just said. We have talented staff. There's no reason for us to outsource any of this work. It needs to, because when you outsource it, it's $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. You're already paying somebody that money anyway. So why aren't you utilizing them?
We don't need to outsource, so many things. Like, you know, if, say, for instance, we were going to redo our shoreline, then yes, I would definitely outsource that, because I don't think that's maybe, you know, an expertise that our staff has. But, you know, for doing a parking study, we definitely have people skilled enough to do that, or to make a decision regards to parking. Absolutely. And as well as a few other things. And the operational review, again, I mean, that I think would be the, you know, job of the CAO and upper management to be able to do a review of the administration, you know, but.
I think what we're talking about really is, and maybe I'm wrong, but it sounds like we want to talk about streamlining.
Yep. You know, streamlining, yeah.
You know, getting to somewhere faster and more effectively rather than doddering and wasting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a good word.
Well, because wasting equals tax increases, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the bottom line is when they're wasting money, it doesn't matter if it's our community or another community, every dollar that's wasted is a dollar that's not going to go into a service that is actually benefiting the community. So we need to again streamline services, use more in-house staff for the skill levels that they themselves have, rather than outsourcing it to consultants. As you said, Stan Frost was fully aware of that. He is a consultant, right? I mean, so
absolutely.
He totally understood that. You know, some of the problem that people have though is the indecision there, so that nobody has to take the blame. This is one of the things that people are saying, that they've said to me, is a lot of stuff is outsourced because that way it's an outside guy who's making the suggestion.
Well, and that's,
and nobody
the public
on staff
perception.
Has to own that, right?
Yeah, and I feel
that's not the reality.
The public perception. Yeah. So, and I feel like Stan, you know, has a very reasonable and balanced approach to his job, and he understood, it was my understanding of working with him, that he understood when it was necessary and when it wasn't.
Right. Well, I want to thank you for your call. How's it going out there on the hustings? Pretty good, I guess.
No, it's been great. So there's been a lot of support. But so I'll let you two get back to your conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
And that, of course, is Teresa Rickerby. She's running for town council here in Coburg. Thanks for the call. Any other counselors? By the way, if we're talking about something that you feel adamant about or you want to be involved in it, give us a call at 905-372-2391 or 905-372-2321, just like Teresa did. One of the other things that we've noticed, and we're looking at the platforms for all three candidates, Paul Pagnuolo, John Henderson, and Donna Todd, they're all running for deputy mayor. Both John Henderson and Paul Pagnuolo have a focus on financing, a background in financing, accountability and transparency. They're talking about their economic development work, but both of them have a background in finance based on their past. Unfortunately for Donna Todd, when you look at hers and her accomplishments, I mean, there's nothing on her accomplishment that talks about anything financial. It's, you know, and again, I don't want to diminish Donna Todd here, but we're talking about a crosswalk on King East, removal of parking on the east side of Church Street, seniors forum, trail seminar, active voice on council. We know that. Recycling and trash bins on the beach. Town of Cobourg councillor, of course, she's been on the audit committee, the tourism committee, the events committee, waterfront festival, waterfront trail, farmers market, library, the art gallery of Northumberland, all these other advisory committees, but none of them, from what I can see, have anything to do with running a budget.
Well, I mean, you know, those are...
But again, Donna, we don't know what your role was on any of these committees, by the way. You may have been the financial facilitator. I don't know.
All that put aside, I mean, I don't see anything on her platform that addresses the issues around finance. For example, John Henderson, he talks about establishing a five-year plan linked to the Cobourg strategic plan, and he wants to identify some outcomes and communicate those to taxpayers and, mm-hmm. and get responses. He's also talking about ensuring that tax dollars are allocated towards public expenditures in an more equitable manner and working towards creating a budget that reflects, you know, the current economic climate. He talks about reviewing the cost per capita for services compared to similar sized municipalities to do a comparator. He wants to, you know, work at the commercial, business, and industrial tax base. Now, those are his planks. He also mentions economic development specifically. Now, Pagliuolo,
Paul Pagliuolo, yeah.
Pagliuolo, he's talking about, undertaking a core review of the local government and identifying specific things that he wants to see done more efficiently or that could be possibly eliminated. And he talks about quality and delivery of service and targeting expenditure control and tax reduction.
Mm-hmm.
So they're talking about economic issues. And I guess, you know, to be fair, If you're going to run for a position that your main job is going to be running the finances of the town, you should be putting stuff out there that that talks about
those very things.
So, nope. Anyway,
no, that's a valid point, and I think that's something that the listeners are going to have to think about when they're voting between the 20th and the 27th, because again, you are putting somebody in a role. Now, again, you know. I'm sure she's a wonderful lady. I met her once. I'm not a personal friend of any of these candidates, quite frankly. Don't really know them at all. So my perception is going to be based on the information which I can get at hand. And, you know, right now I'm looking at Paul Pagliuolo, who's got a history in banking. He wants to see more restraint, lower taxes. That's his primary message. And that's great. A lot of people want to talk about that fiscal conservatism. John Henderson, on the other hand, talks about his history with the town and what he'd like to see in terms of streamlining services as well. Not so much a focus on cutting taxes, but he wants to see a five-year plan that's tied to the town's strategic plan, which makes sense. Yeah. But as you said, for Donna Todd, no such
now,
discussion.
One thing that Todd does address, and this is another critical role for a deputy mayor, and that is when the mayor's away, they run the meetings, mm-hmm. and so you have to have a really good knowledge of procedure, of the
rules,
the rules of debate, all those good things. And one of the things that she emphasizes is her ability to observe and listen and learn. She's very direct in her approach. She mm-hmm. says she has a strong background in procedural issues. She gives a voice to all positions, which is important when you're chairing a meeting, making sure that everybody gets an opportunity to say their piece. And I think that, you know, that's where she's obviously putting her strengths in running for the job. And mm-hmm. so I also noticed the other candidates, they don't even talk about that.
No.
And that's an important aspect of the job.
It is, because what we're talking about there basically is being a facilitator,
mm-hmm.
right? And I mean, you don't need... And by having a facilitator at a meeting, it's the same thing if you're negotiating a contract or having a board meeting with the people here at Northumberland 89.7, for that matter. As a facilitator, you have to be open to everyone,
yeah.
right? You can't be closed-minded. You have to allow everyone the opportunity to make their speech. And the other thing a facilitator does is try and bring everybody together, right?
Absolutely.
And that is a huge role, especially for someone who's going to be the deputy mayor. So again, that is a strength that none of the other two candidates are talking about.
And you know, she even says in her literature, I'm not afraid to say I was wrong. I'm not afraid to make a decision or to take a stand.
Mm-hmm.
But she also says, and I think this is important, I will respect your right to disagree with me. And you know, I think a lot of times we've been looking at situations where people have been banging up against each other because they can't hear what the the other person because they disagree.
Right.
So,
and they don't agree with their right to disagree.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the other aspect of it. So again, and those are some really strong points, quite frankly. I mean, if you want somebody to be the second chair, which is ultimately what the deputy mayor is, you know, you're not just, I mean, let's look at the mayor's job, right? I mean, the mayor really is the face of the town. So he goes to the public launchings and he does the ribbon cuttings and he goes to the big meetings with the province and the county. But for the most part, it's just like a high school vice principal. It's the vice principal who makes sure the day-to-day operations are moving forward with a school. And it's the job of the vice chair to make sure that the board is moving according to the direction of the board as outlined by the entire unit. So really, other than being the face of the town and the captain of the ship, the deputy mayor, for the most part, is the more important role of the two, I would think.
And I'll tell you, you know, you look at the jobs Dan Frost has done, and you got to give the guy credit. I mean, one of the jobs that he did that I don't envy for 1,000 years is he went back and looked at some of the old legislation, mm-hmm. looked at old bylaws. What can we get rid of? What doesn't apply? It was cleaning up the legislation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, week after week, he'd be coming through. And if you look at the agendas and go over them, here are these bylaws from 1976 and 1958. It was just hysterical. And every couple weeks, you know, clearing out some of that. Now, you know, that's another aspect. They're in charge of legislative services. They've got to make sure that the bylaws are done correctly. They introduce the bylaws. They facilitate the debate on that level. So again, you've got to have that kind of mind that likes to do those kinds of things. And he did a great job on that. And, mm-hmm. and you know, that's not always the favorite job. It's not mucking the stalls, so to speak. So,
exactly.
But, you know, and nobody really talks about that aspect of it. But that is, again, another important thing the deputy mayor does.
Well, and something that Donna alludes to in her piece, those are skills that she has. She mm-hmm. has the ability to get down and dirty. She has the not only the ability, but the willingness to do those thankless tasks, as she said. And I mean, let's face it, her background is with the province of Ontario. There's a lot of thankless tasks involved in working for the province. So, you know, there's a lot of down and dirty, gritty stuff that members of the provincial government staff have to deal with on a regular basis. And so having said that, again, you know, don't discount this lady. You know, I mean, granted, she doesn't talk about the fiscal stuff or the financial aspects of it, but she's been there. She's been there in the chair watching across the room as the deputy mayor has done his job. She's a quick study, as she says. So, again, you know, do you have to be a thrifty, you know, fiscal conservative in order to be the deputy mayor, or do you need to have more than that? There needs to be personality as well.
I think, though, you know, when you think about it, everybody associates the deputy mayor's job with the budget, mm-hmm. and I think you can't downplay that at all. And so when we talk about it, you know, she did sit on the downtown revitalization initiative, and she was involved in that, but, you know, I don't know what she's saying at the door. I don't know how she's responding, but there hasn't mm-hmm. been much said publicly from her campaign, or at least in her literature, what we can obtain publicly mm-hmm. About that. So, you know, I mean, it'll all depend. As you and I have said many times, I mean, municipal politics is won and lost on the doorstep.
That's
so,
right.
So, you know, the fact that it isn't in her literature doesn't mean that it isn't getting talked about and that she hasn't got ideas or plans.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of, you know, for the larger public record, we haven't seen too much in terms of what we've been able to do.
Well, one of the things that she did talk about during the debate was the idea of communications with staff. Because one of the questions that was put out there was a question I submitted, by the way, about whether or not, because, you know, you hear this, everyone saying, oh, staff is running the show. They're the ones who are taking everything and they're doing it all. And, you know, that's a perception that's out there. Rightly or wrongly, that's a perception that's out there. So the question was asked. And she said, you know what, the reality is that a lot of the perception out there of this idea that staff is running it is simply because the information isn't getting out to the public. There really isn't enough communication being done with the electorate in order to determine what is really being done by staff and what is being done at council's behest. You know, a lot of the time staff takes a bit of a rough ride over some decisions that is, according to the public perception anyway, a decision that they came to, when in reality, that, you know, it was a directive from on high and they've found the best way to implement that direction. So she talked about that. She talked about the fact that a lot of the information isn't getting out to the public, so that communication isn't there. Communication needs to be a two-way street, she said, and we need to make sure that everyone has access to the information that they need in order to move forward with whatever job they're doing.
And you see that a lot in the literature. I mean, you look through, not just the deputy mayors, but all the councillors and the mayoralty candidates, they're all talking about transparency and accountability. And, you know, we get this every election, and, you know, candidates talking. And I think it's a straw man, really. Transparency comes down to the people who are in charge. And if they're not making the effort to communicate the information, mm-hmm. and they're not reaching out, and again, I mean, this is a hobby horse for me, but, you know, we're still treating communication like we're in the 19th century. Like, you know?
Well, that's the problem.
You know,
that
like,
is the problem.
You know, we hold a public meeting. Well, we did our due diligence. Well, I'm sorry. That's not the way it works in the 21st century. And,
that's right.
You know, we were talking earlier about our debate last night. You know, we pulled all the stops on all the technology. We had a live blog going, and we had incredible numbers of people participating in that way. We had Twitter going. We had Facebook going. We had, people with smartphones out in the community. I mean, you really have to work hard, because the truth of the matter is people don't have the same ability to show up at, you know, 7 o'clock on a Tuesday night to attend a meeting. So
that's
how
right.
do we facilitate that? And I just think, you know, we need some bold ideas, and enough with this criticism that things aren't transparent.
Well, I think a lot of that had to do with some of the deadlock on some of the votes, of the whole 4-3 vote thing that was going on. I mean,
good point.
Part of the issue with communication is if you know you've already got three people on your side, you're not going to talk about it. Why would you talk about it? You don't need to. You don't need to bring anybody else on side. You've got your four people, so you put out whatever press release you need to put out just to curry the favor of the electorate, and then you move on. The real issue with regards to communication is they would probably have had, you know, more 6-1 votes or 6-2, or maybe everyone would get on board with some of the votes if the information was shared and was made available to all the councillors. You know, I mean, say what you will about Miriam Mouton and her so-called grandstanding, okay? Because she did a lot of this. People said, oh, well, she would stand up and raise questions in the public meetings that were raised in camera, and she's just doing it to grandstand. No, she's not doing it to grandstand. She's doing it to show the voters that the questions are being asked, that we are asking the questions. And her problem was, and the problem for Donna Todd on some of these occasions as well, is they just were not getting the answers. They weren't getting them in camera meetings, and they weren't getting them in the public meetings. And the reason for that was the perception was there wasn't a need to give them an answer, because the four others, whoever those four were, have already made a decision.
Okay, I can agree with that, but I also think that there's, you know, in part of politics is being able to convince people to work with you.
Exactly.
And, you know, and the two of them sometimes, you know, they would get, they isolated themselves from the rest of council.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if I'm going to play a hardball and I'm going to not work with everybody, and give me some examples where they were able to build coalitions with their political partners and work together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that balances it out too. I think sometimes it's too easy. I'm not going to disagree with you, Dave. I mean, you're making a valid point, but I think there's another dimension that gets ignored, and that is why was it like that?
Exactly.
And, you know, if you're not treating staff well, or you're not treating your political colleagues well, then that's part of it. So what do? I start hoarding because, you know, why should I talk to you? You're not a very nice person when I'm doing this, or I feel like you burned me. And so, you know, that's part of it. So it's complex, but at the same time, I agree with you. I mean, mm-hmm. something's got to change. I think we're both agreeing with that. Something's got to change in this new council.
Well, and all three of these candidates said the same thing. Something has to change. Right now, it's just not working. One of the phrases used over and over again by Bob Sanderson when he was talking about what's going on in Port Hope is a lot of the stuff that's happening due to the lack of communication or the lack of information being provided, even if people request it over and over and over again. The word that he kept using over and over again was unacceptable. As a voter, it's unacceptable. It's unacceptable that they're not willing to communicate with one another, let alone the public. It's unacceptable that they're not willing to provide the information to the public with regards to how certain monies are being spent. And that just leads to more problems. So, again, his whole notion, and I think the notion from these three candidates as well, is that the old way, the status quo, same old, isn't going to work. It hasn't worked. It's not going to work, and it needs to be changed. Now, how that change comes about, and if it even does come about, because, again, they talked about this 4 years ago as well. Not these three candidates, but three other candidates.
Absolutely.
So the long and short of it is, as long as we just keep talking about it and not actually doing anything, it's a problem. And you and I said before the show, there are no problems. There are just solutions waiting to be implemented. And that is something that these teams need to focus on. You got to remember you're a team, counselors, okay? You got to remember you got to work together. You got to play with the other kids in the sandbox. You can't take your ball and bat and go home every time somebody cheeses you off. That you just can't do it.
And as you've said many times, when you and I have got together, people have got to get out and vote. You've got to let them know, and to let them know that the status quo isn't going to be any good is to get some fresh people in there and mm-hmm. get some new leadership. And where that's not possible, it's, you know, let's get some fresh faces in there around the table so that they can bring a new dynamic, a new energy, a new vision.
Well, and it's nice to see that some of the new council candidates are actually doing their homework. Like Teresa Rickerby phoning us to talk about Stan Frost and his record. Mm-hmm. That's not something I would have expected a council candidate to do. I don't think I expected anyone, whether it's a standing councillor or any other new potential councillor, to call up and say, well, wait a second, Stan did this and this and that. That's somebody who's doing their homework. That's somebody who's paying attention. You know, one of the points you made a few weeks ago was how a number of these candidates, you've never ever seen them in the council chambers, you know. And then you get a candidate like Teresa who, you know, yeah, she doesn't spend a lot of time in council chambers, but she's the chair of the BIA. She's in contact with town staff on a regular basis, not just about BIA issues, but other issues as well. So she's informed. And that's one of the motivators, I think, for why she's running for council at this time.
Well, and I think there's a new dynamic out there because a lot of times before, you know, people used to run and it was a popularity contest. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, well, everybody knows so-and-so. And, oh, yeah. He, you know, he's a great guy. Well, that's just not going to cut it anymore. I mean, there's just too much at stake. So let's hope.
No, you're right. There's just way too much at stake. So anyway, I've been talking to Rob Washburn. We've had a call. That was great that we got a caller today. And we look forward to hearing from you anytime that Rob is here. You will be back next week for another wonderful episode of Consider This. At the top of the hour, of course, is coming up Cedar Rail. And you will enjoy that. That's episode 31 seconds, the Gail Latchford segment too, by the way. So you want to probably check that out. I want to thank you for popping in, Rob. Always a pleasure. We're going to take you away tonight with Suzanne by Leonard Cohen. Here on your drive time.